Welcome, everyone, to the Ready for the Draft podcast. I am your host, Greg Schutz. This is episode 16 of the 2025 podcast series, where we take a look at the draft eligible prospects and get you ready for the NFL draft. And the Senior Bowl, always a highlight of the pre-draft process. Jim Nagy and company do a tremendous job down there in Mobile. Reese's Senior Bowl, once again, went off without a hitch. I thought, you know, you got to see quite a few, not only seniors, but also those underclassmen who qualified and were able to make it into the game as well, were able to qualify, able to go ahead and get the invites. You know, this was a game that was very competitive all the way down to the end. The American team ultimately with a 22-19 win. Really a walk-off play. You know, Jack Besh making the catch in the end zone on a fourth and goal, getting the throw from Seth Hennigan. 2-yard touchdown. Jack Besh, also MVP of the Senior Bowl. And, you know, this is a guy, look, you know, playing with the heavy heart, his brother, Tiger Besh. You know, they're wearing his number on their helmet. Tragically died in the terror attack on New Year's in New Orleans. And, you know, Besh looks like a guy to me that's going to be a day two, you know, second round pick. Could he be a guy that could sneak up into round number one? If he's able to run a 40 time, you know, sub 4.4, similar to what we saw with Ricky Pearsall, I don't see that happening. I think he's probably more in that 4.5 range, 4.55, somewhere around there. But I think he's definitely a day two guy, someone that, you know, if I were a team in the second round, I'm looking for a guy that can catch anything thrown his way, is fearless going over the middle, guy that's going to high point the football just so well to the ball. Jack Besh is going to be one of your guys, 6'2", 215. A guy that you would absolutely want to make sure is on your draft board come April. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the players out of the Senior Bowl by position. Who are the players that stood out? You know, I think there are some positions where it's a lot easier to see guys break out than others, especially when you get into some of the individual drills. But we'll do our best to kind of walk through, especially like the running backs and linebackers. They don't get to stand out nearly as much until you get into really more of those game scenarios. So we start off with the quarterback spot, and I thought Jackson Dart looked solid during the game. Really a nice deep ball off of a flea flicker to Jack Besh, of course. High pointing the football coming across the field. Really a nice throw, deep ball. And that's really what Jackson Dart is known for, are those deep balls. And I think during practice you saw him zipping those balls just right over the head of the DB, who had their back turned at the time. Putting it right on his receiver, dropping the ball right in over the over the shoulder, right in the bucket. You also saw him on the out routes. You know, not only the timing, but then the zip on the football. This is a guy that, you know, gets out of the pocket and isn't afraid to sling the football. So I think with Jackson Dart, this is a guy, is he a first rounder? I think if there is a quarterback needy team, you know, there's been talk that maybe Matthew Stafford might get traded. If that happens, then maybe the Rams are on the market for a guy like Jackson Dart. Pittsburgh, what happens with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields? If Pittsburgh ultimately ends up without a quarterback, then ultimately you could easily see Jackson Dart potentially being a first-round pick. I ultimately think that in terms of grades, Jackson Dart is a second-rounder. I think that's really what makes sense at this point. So that's really what I envision seeing, is a second-round grade there with Jackson Dart. I just don't think it's a very strong quarterback class. I think staying, you know, actually flipping to the other side of the coin and looking at the national team, the top quarterback there was Dylan Gabriel, I thought. During practice, you saw the quick decision making, right? You know, this guy makes his read so quickly and the ball gets out. In record time, you know, this guy is so quick with the decisions. He's getting through, you know, multiple reads, and then the ball is out. Obviously, he's under 6 feet tall. You know, it'll remind you a little bit of Tua, you know, another Hawaiian quarterback. The big thing for me still is that deep ball accuracy. You know, and the inconsistency because of that arm strength is limited. He's not the biggest guy by any means, but to me, I think Dylan Gabriel, if you're a team that's sitting there in the third round, I wouldn't mind taking Dylan Gabriel. This is a guy that, again, there's some flashes of Tua. He's an intelligent quarterback, really good read and react. A guy that can take that throw over 20 yards down the field, but really he's at his best in those short to intermediate throws. If you've got an offense where that's really what you're doing is that short passing game, then maybe Dylan Gabriel would interest you. He's a guy that could fall to round number four, but I think third round would actually be pretty good value for him. We look at Riley Leonard. I thought Riley Leonard during the game was pretty solid. A guy that just continued to, he started off the game so well, moving the football. I think he finished the game 6 of 7 for 54 yards. You saw good decision making, the ball getting out quickly. There was a curl route that a receiver ran, blanket coverage, and was able to fit the ball in where only his receiver could make a play on the football. So for me, Riley Leonard is a guy that day three, but you love the athleticism, you love his ability to run with the football. Now here's the thing, the other guy on that team, Jalen Milroe. He struggled. I thought it was really up and down. He made some really nice balls, some nice throws down the field. And that's really where the deep ball accuracy is, where he's at his best. He can just cut loose with the football and drop it in. We know the athleticism. We know the deep ball skills, right? But what else can he do? I thought processing, he got exposed against Michigan in the bowl game. And then he comes to the Senior Bowl and much of the same. Got into the game itself. It was just 3 of 5, 21 yards. Got sacked 3 times as well. Internal clock not always going off with Jalen Milroe. To me, look, I think because of his athleticism, Jalen Milroe is going to be a guy that teams are going to get excited about. I think teams will overdraft for him. I think he's a day three prospect because he has all those, you're going to have to be patient with him. Development. Maybe you'll get something out of him. You think about Anthony Richardson and the development that he's needed to this point. And Jalen Milroe, much the same way. I think, he needs to be able to see the entire field. He needs to be able to make the right reads. He needs to make those reads, not only make the right read, but make it in time. So I think there are some struggles there for him. I thought Tyler Shuck looked solid overall throughout the day, throughout the week, I should say. 6 of 13, he also threw an interception, and that interception really was, he wasn't expecting the safety Ransaw to sit from Tulane, threw the ball, ended up being behind Fannin and the pick on the day. But I think what Tyler Shuck showed you was, yes, he's going to be a 26-year-old rookie, but he can make some plays outside the pocket, show their strong arm, getting outside the pocket, throwing the ball down the field. So Tyler Shuck, to me, is going to be a late day three pick. One other guy to make mention of is Seth Hennigan. Seth Hennigan came out during the game, actually was the guy who threw that touchdown pass on the walk-off to Jack Besh. And that was it was something I think that was really good for him. 12 of 14, 132 yards, and a guy that showed that he could lead that team down the field. I don't think he really stood out at all in any of the drills during the week. When it finally came to Saturday, you got to see Seth Hennigan emerge. Is he going to be a guy? He's one of those fringe quarterbacks. Is he going to be a seventh rounder, or is he going to be a priority free agent? I think that's really going to be the big question mark. I remember Austin Reed coming out of Western Kentucky last year. I thought maybe he'd be a guy that would fall there in round number 7. Ultimately, he ended up being an undrafted free agent. I think that's probably going to be the same thing for Seth Hennigan at this point. But that's the quarterback position. We get to the running backs. And I think if we start with the national team and we look at the backs, LaQuint Allen, Woody Marks, both catching the football really well out of the backfield. I think that was something that stood out with the two of them. Ollie Gordon did a really solid job during the game, getting downhill. He's a one-cut-and-go type of a guy. He's going to want to be a slasher, not really going to dance at all. He struggles to create for himself, I think, so it's really putting the foot in the ground and getting downhill in a hurry. I thought his pass protection really lacked. I think that was something that he really struggled with. There are linebackers like Jeffrey Bassa, able to just sidestep him on the drills. And so I think that's something that Ollie Gordon's going to have to continue to work on. Donovan Edwards, showcasing his ability to catch the football out of the backfield as well. Just a natural pass catcher. Maybe he's a guy that you end up converting to receiver, line him up in the slot. And then Damian Martinez, really an interesting dude. Big running back. He's 6 foot, 230 pounds. And then A guy like him should not be able to move laterally like he does. So that was something that really stood out for me as well. I thought Bashal Tootin out of Virginia Tech, another guy that showed up really well in the pass protection drills. That was something that really stood out. Then you get over to the other team, to the American. You know, I'm a big fan of Devin Neal. I think he's underrated. He's a guy that's continuing to develop both power game, speed, getting to the outside. You saw that quite, you know, time and time again, catching the football. Rashard Smith had a 39-yard kickoff return in the game. And another guy who's a natural pass catcher, Trevor Etienne, not as explosive as his brother, a decent pass catcher overall. But really, the route running was something that stood out with Etienne. R.J. Harvey, another guy that runs well, as a pass catcher, especially. Jarquez Hunter didn't really stand out, but a guy that could end up being a third, fourth rounder. And then Marcus Yarns out of Delaware. I think he absolutely proved that he can, that he not only can be there at that level, but a guy that could be that change of pace back at the next level. He's a guy that I think is worth a flyer late in the draft, sixth, seventh round. I thought Dylan Mobby, was going to go probably in the fifth round, ended up falling to number six, the sixth round. I think that's going to be something similar there for Marcus Yarns. Now, when we get to the receiver position, obviously Jack Besh, I've already mentioned him. He was a guy that stood out each and every day. Really a playmaker and a guy that was just, he was reliable. His quarterbacks knew where they wanted to go with the football, and they were going to be teeing it up to him whenever possible. This was a group where you got to see a little bit of everything, right? So you had the slot receivers like Xavier Restrepo, very sudden in and out of his breaks. Excellent, hands catching the ball away from his frame. Jalen Knoll, very sudden. Guy that will make you miss in the open field, a guy that's able to drop, sink those hips, and really get out of his breaks without losing any speed. So that was really impressive. I thought Tez Johnson was another one. This was a guy that he was so difficult to cover. You'd watch him. He kind of lean in just a little bit and snap those routes out. And, he was just so difficult, whether it was over the middle or to the outside. He was making himself available for his quarterbacks. Jalen Lane is another guy, late round, Virginia Tech, a smaller receiver. And then you get some of the bigger guys out there on the edge. Jaden Higgins out of Iowa State. Guys like him, his size, he should not be able to run the routes that he's able to do. Gets some really clean releases and then leans into those corners and then able to snap those routes out. He's also a guy that's going to go up and win those 50-50 balls. I think you just want to watch the hips. That's really the biggest thing with the taller receivers. I thought he looked really smooth. Pat Bryant, it was a guy that was able to get down the field, does a great job adjusting to the football. He's a guy that's either late day two, early day three, to keep an eye on for sure. Then you get over to the American team, and Jalen Royals was difficult to cover in the one-on-ones because not only the release, but then the speed, his ability to accelerate out of his breaks. Ty Felton is another guy that's going to take the top off of the defense. Has good size, but the hands, the ability to catch the ball at the high pointing the football, showing really good range as well in terms of his catch radius. So that was something else that stood out. Isaac Tesla, two catches for 35 yards, including the two-point conversion in the fourth quarter. He was a guy that stood out. I think he's going to start having teams go back and take a look at more film. Really, it was Andrew Armstrong that was the number one guy there for the Hogs. And I thought Isaac Tesla had a decent week for himself. Didn't look out of place. And he wasn't the number one guy, but he's a guy that showed decent route running ability, his ability to get open, ran a corner route in the one-on-ones, was able to separate at the end of that route and make the catch right over the shoulder. So I think Isaac Tesla is a guy that is going to continue to move up draft boards, probably mid-day three, late day three, but still a guy that I think is going to be on teams' radars. Then you get to the tight end position, and really, it was Elijah Arroyo and Harold Fannin, both sitting there on that national team, that really stole the show. Now, with Elijah Arroyo, this is a guy, I want to see what that 40 time is. He reminds you a little bit of Evan Engram. Engram, obviously, the 4.38 40, I want to say, at the combine, really solidified his status as a first rounder. Right? I don't think Arroyo is going to run that fast. I think Arroyo is going to be a day two guy, but better blocker than I think people give him credit for. But the route running, this was a guy, he did not look like a tight end with the route running ability. took a ball up the seam, and you know, the head fakes, and you know, the ability to accelerate out of any of his cuts. Arroyo just creating all kinds of separation. It was tremendous to watch. Harold Fannin Jr., a tremendous blocker. That's one of the things that I will say for Fannin. When you watch him in just the individual drills, he looked very stiff, very robotic, very, you know, just the stiffness in the hips. And you're just like, wow, is this guy, you know, where's, how did this guy end up with 117 receptions on the year? But then you get him in the one-on-ones, you get him in the games, and this is a guy that's able to make you, you know, make you second guess yourself. The route running is there, the hands are there, his ability to run after catch also there. So the competitive fire there with Harold Fannin really stood out for me more than anything else. I think on the other side, I thought Mason Taylor had a good week. The route running ability, showing off his hands. Jackson Hawes out of Georgia Tech, known more so as a blocker, but showed some really soft hands, especially along the sideline, running up the seam. He's a guy that, you know, day three type of a guy. Look, you know, Tip Reiman, especially after the combine, he started to continue to rise up draft boards, ended up in round number three. It was a weaker tight end class, so he was able to do that. This is a very deep tight end class. I don't think Jackson Hawes is going to have that rise that we saw with Tip Reiman, but I think he's one of those guys that's going to get drafted a lot higher than people expect. Jake Brittingstuhl, you know, not known for his blocking ability, but showed off his hands. Really a tall, lanky tight end prospect, the guy that's going to be your line him in your slot, a guy that's going to be a red zone nightmare. And so that's really where you see Brittingstuhl, you know, early day three, I think, for Brittingstuhl makes a lot of sense, just given the depth of this tight end class. So then we get into the trenches, and we're going to talk O-line and D-line. We'll start with the O-line, then we'll get to the D-line and the matchups here. Really a lot of fun. If we start at the offensive tackle position, I think the first guy that you have to talk about is Josh Connerly Jr. Out of Oregon. You know, 6'4", 310, wanted to see, you know, the athleticism. You absolutely got to see that. This was a guy that was really quick. You know, he gets set up and stays square to his man. Excellent hand placement and, you know, the ability to mirror his man. I think that's something that you definitely saw. Guys would try to attack him to the inside. Quick power move. Keeps those hands on him. You know, the biggest thing that I think with Joshua Connerly, and something that we saw throughout the year, was his inability to anchor. That was really the biggest thing. And he'd get on his heels so easily, and you'd see guys that would drive him back. I thought, you know, Josiah Stewart had a rep where he was able to muscle him and get to the inside. But that said, you know, the hand placement, you know, going up against Femi Oladejo, he had some really good matchups going against him. Kept the feet moving, kept him square, you know, even as he was trying to work inside out. Just really showing the change of direction. The biggest thing, you know, maintaining contact throughout the rep, I think that was another big deal, especially when he was going up against Darius Alexander. He did get run over by Mike Green, the explosive Marshall edge rusher. And that's really, you know, again, speaks to him getting on his heels quickly and being able to get blown off the ball. He needs to be able to anchor. He needs to work on that lower half. But I'll tell you what, Josh Connerly, he was even rated by his peers as the number one offensive lineman in the Senior Bowl. So Joshua Connerly solidifying his status as a first rounder. Now, I think the guy who actually had the best one-on-one, what was Gray Zabel out of North Dakota State. Now, with Gray Zabel, this is a guy that started at tackle with the Bison, but he lined up at left guard, right guard, and at the center position, and, you know, really excelled in all areas. This was a guy who, it didn't matter who he went up against, whether it was the power of Joshua Farmer, the quickness and size of Jamari Campbell, the quickness of Aeneas Peebles, the physicality of Ty Robinson. We got to go up against Darius Alexander, who had himself a week for sure. Y.A. Black. It didn't matter who it was. This guy was just showing just impressive ability. You know, against Ty Robinson, dropping the hips, shooting the hands in, holds up on Robinson. Good feet against Alexander. Gets his hands on him early to win. That's one of the things that I thought was really impressive, was he was getting those hands into the body of these D-tackles so well. Able to anchor, sit down against the bull rush of Joshua Farmer, who was so strong. just always was working to finish. You know, you watch him against Aeneas Peebles, excellent lateral agility, shooting the hands inside, able to really keep him in front as the right guard. And the lower body flexibility was something that was just tremendous. Change of direction with him, had a high-low catch on YA Black, just really drive him up the field, away from the quarterback. When he got into the game, it was, you know, those game scenarios. I think this is a lack of reps on the interior. You know, really struggled a couple of times. You know, guys getting to jump on him, getting into the backfield. So those are things that I think Gray Zabel is going to need to clean up, and I think he will. Ariante Ursary, I thought was another guy who looked really solid. You know, going up against Landon Jackson, going up against Donovan Azuraku, just really using his length. You know, even Mike Green, you know, just doing a great job keeping them square. Excellent recoverability, and you know, guys that were trying to attack that outside shoulder really were struggling to do so. 6'6", 330 pounds, and has a long wingspan. And there were people that were talking about, well, it's not. You know, I thought the one-on-ones allowed him to showcase his athleticism. You know, in the broadcast, the Big Ten broadcast, they were talking about Ursary working out with the receivers. I think at the combine, we could see a guy that could really set the world on fire. And he's one of those guys to me that I think late one feels a lot, you know, feels about right. I think if I'm the Kansas City Chiefs, you need a tackle. You already have Kingsley Suamataya as a guy that you have waiting in the wings. I think you bring in Ariante Ursary to cover the other side, and I think you've got a couple of bookends. Ozzie Trapillo out of Boston College, another guy who has tremendous length. You know, 6'8", 321 pounds, really large. He was beaten by Mike Green with the speed, but another, you know, next rep really kept him wide. You know, just ride him away from the pocket, using that length to his advantage. Uses that length punch to set, very patient against Landon Jackson. Good base, able to stone Ja Joyner, gets his hands on him, really a wide base, just anchored. One against Oladejo as well, forcing him out wide. And really calling Oliver even tried to get underneath him, and he just did not allow it to happen. So I think Trapillo had really a solid week. He's a guy that I think could end up sneaking his way into round number three, and he wasn't a guy that I think was really on everyone's radar as a day two prospect. I think, you know, early day three, maybe a fourth rounder, but I think, you know, he's actually moving up draft boards for sure. Marcus Bowe. You know, he's an excellent athlete. I think he struggles with his anchor at times. You know, he's tremendously physical. He was beaten inside by Mike Green with some quickness. He was driven back early in the rep by Oladejo, able to reset his feet, finish the rep strong. Very athletic against Josiah Stewart. Beaten to the inside pretty badly by Oladejo, but then on the next rep, able to stay square, good hand placement, able to anchor there. It's just inconsistency. I think that's really the biggest thing with Marcus Bowe right now. If he can, you know, continue to churn out positive reps, he's a guy that I think teams are going to be interested in. I think, you know, I saw some people say maybe he's a first rounder. I see day two. You know, there's obviously traits there, the athleticism, but I think, you know, he's also a work in progress, and I think that's really why I take him in round number two. Jonah Monheim out of USC. This guy played really all over the line for the Trojans, whether it was a guard at left tackle, then he moves inside to the center position. I think center is really where he is going to excel. Excellent job anchoring on the bull rush by Ty Robinson. Active hands. Ended up losing with a push over the nose by Junior Tafuna. But he gets his hands on guys so quick. That's one of the things that I thought was really impressive. He'd shoot the hands in. Battled against YA Black. Next few reps against Junior Tafuna, was able to stay square against him. Lateral agility against Jamari Caldwell, lining up at left guard as well. There was a jump set on YA Black that he long arms him. Hands inside, really a good rep there. You know, Caldwell with an initial push, able to ultimately stay in front with his hands to the inside. That's something that I think, you know, technique-wise, that's something that's really going to help Jonah Monheim out. Then you got him in the game, and he's climbing to the next level and sealing off linebackers for his running backs to get decent gains. To me, Monheim is either center one or center two. And I think Zabel right now is my number one center. And then I've got Monheim, followed by Jared Wilson and Drew Kendall. I thought he really showed up well in the drills. Wyatt Milam out of West Virginia. This guy's a guard. I think he proved that in this. But it was one of those things. Just showed tremendously strong hands. Jump set at left guard. Extended his left hand into YA Black. And then he was able to control him with that long arm and just absolutely just washed him away. It was really an impressive rep. Tried to do the same thing, but the jump set on Donovan Isoraku stopped his feet, and ultimately the end gets by him. But excellent feet. You know, I thought that was one of the things that you saw with him. And Aeneas Peebles tried to spin move on him. He was able to keep him square. Driven back initially by Junior Tafuna, showed that he was able to reset his feet and anchor. So I think Wyatt Milam, for me, is a guy that, you know, he's going to be a guard at the next level. But I've got him in my top five at the guard position right now. Anthony Belton, you know, I thought used his length to his advantage, using those long arms. You know, I thought, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he showed the kick slide, you know, the ability, you know, anchors well. Ultimately took Landon Jackson and drove him to the ground. You know, you love the hand placement, high-low, able to stuff a lot of the rushes. Got his hands on Josiah Stewart early, able to anchor, use his length to keep him away as well. There was a snatch block at guard to win early in the rep as well. So I look at Anthony Belton, and could he be a guard possibly? Because I think the foot speed is still a little questionable, but the length, there's a ton of it. And you know, I think there's some people that had him, you know, rated really high, saying, all right, it's going to be an early second rounder. I think round three isn't out of the possibility there. You know, Jonas Savanaya lined up at tackle, and just, you know, the speed was getting the better of him. I thought Jonas Savanaya really excelled at guard, was able to just stand guys up using tremendous leverage. The grip strength was off the charts. Emory Jones Jr. the same way. He just couldn't stay square. You know, there was a rep against RJ Oben. Only able to get the hands on him. You know, just a speed rush, ran right around him. But he won with really strong hands, just clamping down on guys. You know, he took Shamar Stewart, washed him down across the line. Ultimately, I think he's going to be at his best on the inside as a guard. The footwork, really, he was a disappointment during the season. And you know, I think ultimately you put him inside, that's where he's going to excel. Miles Frazier actually had a really solid Senior Bowl, hooks underneath guys. You know, won against Princely Umamielen. You know, ultimately won quickly against him. Showed some good quickness. You know, really had some nice battles with Tim Smith. Smith would try to spin outside, ended up meeting him, stayed connected to him. You know, didn't really lose any leverage there. I thought Jackson Slater looked solid. Tried to jump set Omar Norman Lott and beat him up the field. But then you watch him, he learned from his mistakes, right? I mean, there's Jared Ivey getting underneath his pad level, able to wash him away all the way to the inside. This is a guy, look, according to Pro Football Focus, 363 pass block snaps, zero sacks, zero quarterback hits at Sacramento State, 44 starts to his belt. You know, showed his ability to climb to the second level, lock on to the linebacker, Jack Kaiser. Kept Walter Nolan square as a center as well. I think Jackson Slater, ultimately, you know, he has that versatility to play, you know, any of the interior line positions. I think the center is probably where you want to see him line up. Now, the flip side, I thought the guy that really struggled was Garrett Dellinger. His pad level was just way too high, not much of a base. He was getting run over left and right, whether it was, you know, TJ Sanders or Cam Jackson. It was just the pad level continued to creep up. He really struggled. He's one of those guys to me that I think he really kind of played his way out of being drafted. I think teams really should be taking him off the draft board just because he struggled against a lot of these guys. And look, this wasn't an offensive line group that was really impressive to begin with. You know, it was kind of a disappointment. You know, you still have Will Campbell, who was putting together a really nice season. Miles Frazier was up and down. Garrett Dellinger, to me, I thought was a disappointment out of, you know, the four LSU offensive linemen that were here at the Senior Bowl. Now, one guy that was a surprise at 5'10", 270 pounds, Willie Lampkin, it didn't matter who he was going up against. He was getting underneath them, stoning them. He beat them off the ball, shoot the hands in, and just win with leverage and the anchor. And they had such quick feet as well. So I thought Willie Lampkin was a guy that I think teams are going to want to continue to look at him. Because look, you know, I mean, 5'11", 270, he's an undersized guy. His play is going to force you to go back to the game film and really study him a little bit more to decide if that's a guy that you ultimately want to target. Now, the defensive line group, flipping it, you know, going on the other side of the one-on-ones, I thought Mike Green, you know, obviously being able to run over someone like Josh Connerly was tremendous. You know, you saw the burst to beat Marcus Bowe to the inside, quick speed to get around Ozzie Capillo, as I mentioned earlier, can telegraph his moves, especially his spin moves. You know, there were a lot of times where he tried a spin move and guys would stay connected to him, would be able to wall him off. So I think that's really the biggest thing that you have to worry about with Mike Green. But look, you know, he showed up heavier than what he was playing at, 251 pounds at the Senior Bowl. That's plenty big enough for somebody coming off the edge. I think he solidified his status. Now look, the sack leader for the FBS at 17 sacks, he solidified his status as a first rounder. I thought Shamar Stewart was the other one that was just fabulous. He was so disruptive in the backfield all Senior Bowl long. And it's one of those things too, you know, he's got that explosive burst, he's disruptive, would do a good job in the team settings, reading some of the slants, able to get downhill in a hurry. You watched him against Jonas Abanaya, the leverage and bend to get underneath him, speed to power up, you know, getting under Emery Jones, gets his inside hand under the armpit and really jacks him all the way back to the quarterback. Uses hands to shove the right tackle, Carson Vinson, up the field, then cross inside to get to the quarterback, crash it backside, collapse to the tight end, Jake Brittingstool, able to shove Emery Jones back with power, just walking Savanaya back, speed rush to just run right around Emery Jones, chops down on Seth Hennigan's arm to force a fumble with a strip sack. Now look, this guy was a 2024 third-team All-SEC, just 5.5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks. The production wasn't there. He was still disruptive, getting into the backfield, a lot of the hurries, a lot of the pressures, but he wasn't getting home. That's the big question mark. That's why I think Shamar Stewart's draft stock, there's some people that were talking about him in like the mid-teens. I think he's ultimately going to come off the board somewhere in the 20s. Yes, you think of a guy like Odafe Owe, who had zero sacks the year that he came out. And he still ended up being drafted in round number one at the end of the first round. I think Shamar Stewart has a ton of talent. He's 6'6", 290 pounds, can play in an even or odd man front, line him outside, line him inside, wherever you want to line him up to get after the quarterback. But he was disruptive all day. It didn't matter who was up against him. But the big question is this a guy at the next level that you're going to be able to unleash, because the production just wasn't there at A&M. I think with the traits, with the right defensive line coach, this guy could be a real problem at the next level. Another guy was Darius Alexander. You watched him drop into coverage on that pick six that he had, that I think is all over social media. And then the athleticism take off for that pick six as well, take off into the end zone. Now, this is a guy, he would work inside against the right guard, Jalen Rivers. Quick rip move to clear, gets that inside shoulder and attacks, gets down the field. Very quick hand. That's something that I thought was impressive. The tackle, Jalen Travis, because he was lining both inside and outside at 6'4", 310. And, 6'4", 295, 305, 310. Right around in that range. But Travis oversets, takes advantage of it with a quick slap on the inside shoulder, and then gets to the quarterback. Power in his hands, drive guys back, and then work back to the inside. Showed some speed to run right past Jonah Monheim. To me, Darius Alexander is a top 50 pick. And when you watched him play, he has a feel of a Chris Jones. Was a second-round pick himself out of Mississippi State. And I think, Darius Alexander, the big question mark for him coming out of Toledo was, is this a guy that can match up against the big boys? I think he answered those questions. I mean, you saw it with Quinyon Mitchell last year, Darius Alexander this year. He kind of reminds me of a Darius Robinson in a way. And so you could line him up in a lot of different positions. So because of that versatility, could he sneak his way into round one, very late round one? I think it's always possible, especially if he sets the world on fire there at the combine. Joshua Farmer was a guy that was just showing tremendous power. Another guy that I thought really was underwhelming was Caleb Rogers, the tackle out of Texas Tech. He was playing inside a guard. He was just getting blown off the ball. Farmer was, it was just the out-muscling guys. He'd show some quick hands, to drive up the field as well, but a lot of it was that speed to power, a good burst and driving guys back. Femi Oladejo, I mentioned him earlier, speed rush for days. This is a guy that was kind of an off-ball linebacker starting there at UCLA, ended up as an edge rusher, and this was a guy that he drove Marcus Bau back into the backfield. There's a hop step against Joshua Connerly, and Connerly was able to kind of take care of that, try to beat him to the inside. But you saw the explosiveness coming off the edge. I think the athleticism is something that really will be intriguing. Jalix Hunt kind of comes to mind when I watch him play a little bit. Junior Tafuna, It was a late add, but you watched him with good active hands, gets a good push, had a couple of sacks during the Senior Bowl. David Walker of Central Arkansas, 6'2", 260, wanted to see what this guy could do, and he had a day. And not only in the Senior Bowl, but then really the whole week. Had a day, though, as I say, in the game itself, had two sacks. Was just physical. He was lining up along the inside and showing his quickness to get to the quarterback on one of those sacks. Speed to power. He looks to jolt you back, take that inside rush, and then get to the quarterback. He was able to bend and dip right underneath Ozzie Trapillo as well. Powerful in his hands. Savion Jones is another one. This was a guy at LSU, had a couple of sacks against USC in the opener. And a guy that, again, outside or inside, really LSU playing that odd man front a lot of times. So he was a guy that I think could play that five technique, but he also lined up at tackle in that 4-3 setting that they have there in the Senior Bowl with those rules. And he was so explosive coming off the ball, just ran right by, I think it was Clay Webb, getting into the backfield, dropping the quarterback. So he's another guy to keep an eye out for. Landon Jackson, I thought, looked stiff. I thought he looked... he was getting forced wide quite a bit in the one-on-ones, but then when it came to the game, this was a dude who was taking things to another level. Speed rush, showed his ability to dip that inside shoulder, used his hands really well, was able to get a strip sack on Jackson Dart, chop it down on the ball. So not only is this a guy that can get home, but he knows what to do with it, with his hands to attack the football when he gets there. Aeneas Peebles showing a tremendous explosiveness out of the block. Two-hand swipe on Jalen Rivers, ran right by him. Super, super explosive. So he's one of those undersized defensive tackles, but a guy that can absolutely make plays behind the line of scrimmage. Walter Nolan, I saved him towards the end for a reason, because I wanted to talk about him, Deion Walker, Jared Ivey to a degree, and then Omar Norman Lott to really close things out. Now, Walter, look, 2024 Outland Trophy finalist, 14 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks, moving on from Texas A&M to Mississippi, and you saw the twitchiness to him. Slant, penetrate, can't get washed down the line, but this dude, was just speed to power, drove Clay Webb all the way back into the backfield, even with Webb getting a false start, getting a jump on him. But just, he's so quick off the ball. I think it was Lewis Riddick during the broadcast talking about the violent collision. The violence to his game is absolutely there. I would agree 100%, echo those comments. And then you watch the speed as well. And he's a guy that I think is going to be a problem. I'm looking at Cincinnati at 17, Walter Nolan. You pair him up with Trey Hendrickson outside, inside there, I think it would be a lot of fun to watch. Deion Walker is a mammoth of a dude. He's 6'8", 360. He doesn't always have a game plan as a pass rusher because a lot of times the pad level stands up. It's too high. He just stands straight up. And guys would just be able to get underneath him. He could go anywhere. When he fires low off the ball, there's one rep against Garrett Dellinger. He's able to tack the wrists and force him all the way back. That was one of the things that was really impressive. Powerful push-pull on Miles Frazier. So he's very powerful. If he can stay low consistently, this guy could absolutely be a problem at the next level. I think conditioning as well. This was a guy who had a tremendous year in 2023 getting to the quarterback. I want to say 7.5 sacks. Didn't see the same production in 2024. So it's one of those guys where the motor runs hot and cold. If you can get that motor to stay hot more often than it runs cold, I think Deion Walker could be a find there on day two. Omar Norman Lott. And this is a guy that I mentioned Jackson Slater trying to jump set him. He was able to beat him up the field. With the team groups, quick penetration, beating Slater to the inside, playing the guard spot, able to blow up a run play, shooting gaps, getting right off the guard hip, getting into the backfield was a problem both against the run and the pass. Big thing with Norman Lott is they ran a lot of, there's not a ton of reps for him there at Tennessee, and it got on that, and I was like, why wasn't he starting? But it was one of those things where limited reps, and yet when he was out there on the field, he made his presence felt. And so that's one of the things I think when you think about guys with those traits, he's a guy that I think, because of that explosiveness, could be a guy on day two. And then Jared Ivey was, he look, He's 6'5", 285 pounds. I thought kind of an up and down, but what I like with him is you can kick him inside because of his size. Kick him inside on obvious passing downs. I think that's where he could really be a problem with his quickness. I thought TJ Sanders, explosive, speed to power, just ran right over Garrett Dellinger. Again, Dellinger's name is continuing to pop up. But you know, I think that was the thing with TJ Sanders is quickness off the football, speed to power, excellent hand usage, very athletic. I think Sanders to me is a day two guy all day long. Princely Umamielen is an interesting dude. He had a spin move against Logan Brown. Really didn't go anywhere. There was a trap technique. He was able to somehow keep his balance. And he's just a freaky athlete coming off the edge. He's one of those guys for me when I'm looking at Donovan Azeraku and Umamielen. Who's going to be that last first rounder when we're talking about edge rushers? Because I'm looking at Philly, they're going to be taking an edge rusher. You know, we kind of expect that to happen. And so I think it's going to be one of these guys. Donovan Azeraku, the aforementioned Azeraku, has tremendously long arms. I think that's one of the things that you see. Good power, and then the speed after that. Excellent flexibility. As a stand-up, attacks the hands, able to bend, get underneath. He was able to beat Josh Connerly off the edge. You see a cross chop, and then he kind of jumped in the air. Very athletic. Jamari Caldwell out of Oregon got skinny to flip his hips on the one-on-one. Really interesting, because he's 340 pounds. He has really good quickness coming off the football. I think he's a guy that was really overshadowed there by Derek Harmon this past season. But I think he's a guy that's going to make a name for himself. I think especially if he shows up well there at the combine and some of the workouts, he'll be a guy that can definitely move up draft boards for sure. I thought Baron Sorrell, I saw a really nice push-pull on the edge to beat the left tackle Logan Brown out of Kansas. Extended into Jonas Avenia, able to drive him back as well, showing nice power there. So those were the guys that stood out for me at the defensive line. When you look at the linebackers, I thought Jack Kaiser stood out as a guy who was very intelligent. He was a guy that was undercutting routes for interceptions. Better athlete than I think I even gave him credit for. I thought that was something that was impressive. Another guy that I thought was instinctive was Demetrius Knight out of South Carolina. A guy that moves really well, as does Smile Munden out of Georgia. Smile Munden, 6'2", 235 pounds. He can do a lot of things. He plays sideline to sideline. He can drop into coverage. A guy that can get after the quarterback as well. So Smile Munden, I think, is one of those guys that's going to continue to move up draft boards. I thought Eugene Asante, showcased some of his physicality. If you get over to the national team, I thought Cody Lindenberg, had some picks during the game. I'm sorry, during some of the practices, you saw him getting back, getting depth, getting into throwing lanes. But Jeffrey Bossa, to me, was the guy that was the most impressive. Another guy that he would get into coverage and trying to remember who it was that it was against. Can't remember who it was now. Oh, it was Tez Johnson. Really, got deep in coverage, ended up breaking up a pass down the sideline. Now, that's Tez Johnson, the guy who was explosive. He was able to ultimately make a play on the football. You watch him shooting gaps, getting downhill to fill against the run. He had a rep against Donovan Edwards, where we know that he's a really good route runner. And he closes the gap on him. Edwards ends up running right by him on a corner route. Gets to the outside, and Bossa was ultimately able to recover and break it up. So you see the athleticism, you see the recoverability. This guy is able to defend both the pass and the rush. If you can drop back into coverage as a linebacker, you're going to have a home at the next level. So I thought Jeffrey Bossa was a guy that definitely stood out. When he's going up against running backs in the pass protection drills, especially against Ollie Gordon, he was just running right by him. So you see the athleticism and his ability to be a playmaker. I thought that was another thing that stood out for sure. Now, we've already talked about the receivers and who showed up. What about the defensive backs? Who are the guys that really made a name for themselves? I think if we start with the national team, Azariah Thomas looks like a potential first rounder there at that cornerback position. I think he'll ultimately fall to day two. I think he'll be a second rounder. I think ultimately there were a few guys that we thought may go round one a season ago, and ultimately they ended up falling to round number two. I think a lot of that was due to all the offensive players that were coming off the board. You know, first 14 picks were all offensive guys. But I think with this draft, there's a lot of depth, you know, at this position. When you look at it, who are the guys? You know, can I wait a little bit longer to get one of these guys? I think that's really where teams are going to be thinking about it. I think Azariah Thomas, though, he uses that length at 6'2", but it's extremely fluid as an athlete. I thought Sebastian Castro in the game, attacking the football, looked really solid. I think he had 5 tackles on the day to lead things. Quincy Riley, this is a guy that I think is going to be a problem for offenses lining up in the slot. You know, he showed his ability to play on the outside as well. Could be a lockdown type corner, guy that I think, you know, day two is a guy that, you know, that feels about right. You know, Darian Porter using his size there out of Iowa State. Athlete, a guy that's going to be interesting to watch as the pre-draft process goes along, you know, because he's a track guy, so that's going to be interesting. Jalen Smith, I think when they were doing the timings, at one point I think he had the fastest time coming out of USC. He's a guy that really they had him at the nickel, and ultimately when DeAnton Lynn came in and said, you know what, I'm watching this kid play, he really should be on the outside. So he's a guy that has that ability to play both positions. Now you get to the American team. Maxwell Hairston, this dude is a lockdown cornerback. Another guy who is very fluid. When you watch the hips, he's very patient at the line. That flips those hips, turns and runs right in the receiver's hip pocket. You know, did miss some games this year due to injuries to the medical. You'll have to kind of keep an eye on that. Got his hands on Jack Besh, you know, early press, able to get out in front, knock the pass down, so understanding the route running ability as well of some of these receivers and being able to beat them to the football. Jacob Parrish, I thought, was just really handsy. He wants to be physical. Sometimes he can be a little bit too physical. Billy Bowman had a really nice rep where it was an out route, and ultimately he looked to drive on the football, and rather than just play the receiver, he ended up undercutting the route, picked off the football. You see the instincts there in coverage. Dante Trader Jr. was another guy. The safety, he was an interesting guy because you watched his cover ability. I thought he did a really good job covering the tight ends. Dan Jackson, this dude was literally all over the place. You watched him, you know, fighting at the catch point against Mason Taylor, knocking away a pass on the sideline, on a corner route, able to undercut a route by the tight end Jackson Hawes. Physical dude, physical presence. Dan Jackson, to me, is just going to be a good football player who's going to be playing in the league for a long time. Mac McWilliams was a guy that I think early on set the tone, ultimately started kind of struggling a little bit as the day progressed, or the week progressed, I should say. Upton Stout looks like a slot corner and a guy that day three someone's going to get a gem. Hunter Wohler plays 100 miles an hour, very physical, wants to come up and hit you all day long coming out of Wisconsin. So those were my observations of the Senior Bowl. And now we can go ahead and move on to the Combine. We'll go ahead, break down the Combine, really as we gear up for it. It's going to be starting up on Monday, February 24th. Run all the way through that week. Stay tuned. It's always a good time. Always get to see these guys on display. Compare and contrast the different body types, the different styles. Be able to see, you know, just how fluid a lot of these guys are. You can't trust all the measurements and all the times there. Really, at the end of the day, it's the film that outweighs everything else. But a lot of times, this is either going to just confirm what you've already seen on tape, or it's going to send you back to the tape to see what was it that I missed. You know, see if there was something that looks off. You know, I think when you look at a guy like DK Metcalf, for example, a guy that had that vertical speed, but he was really slow with a lot of his ability to change directions. I thought day two all day long, but I thought that really hurt him in terms of being picked in round number one. I think another guy was Anquan Boldin back when he was coming out of Florida State. I think about Anquan Boldin. I had him in my first round at one point, and then he runs a really slow 40, and I don't think he was able to recover. I want to say he was ultimately drafted in round number three, but a lot of people at the time, before that 40 time, were talking about him as a potential first rounder. And I was one of them. And then ultimately he ends up falling, and I think it was a lot of it was due to some of that work and people really just nervous about his top-end speed. You know, they thought, all right, you know, it's not always going to be there, but he can't be that slow. I think it was like in the 4.7s or 4.8. It was really a slow time. And I think that really affected the draft stock overall, I mean, from day one to day two like that. Could we have some guys fall into that situation? It's always possible. I think the medicals are going to be huge for a lot of these guys. I think about a guy like Josh Simmons. Josh Simmons is a guy that left tackle out of Ohio State, first rounder, and not only that, could end up being a top 10 pick if he stayed healthy. Now with that torn patellar tendon, that's really the big concern. You know, I always have flashbacks to Miles Jack. He didn't have a patellar tendon knee issue, but they found all kinds of issues with that knee, and he was a top 10 pick that ultimately fell to the second round. So those injuries, the medicals are going to be huge for a lot of these guys. Look, Michael Penix Jr. ended his season 4 straight years at Indiana, no injuries at Washington, clean bill of health for him. He ends up coming off the board to Atlanta in the top 10. And then with Liatu Latu, ultimately with the neck injury, he had to medically retire from Washington, ends up transferring to UCLA, gets a clean bill of health, and his medicals check out. He ends up the 15th overall pick. So I think a lot of times those medicals, when they do check out, really it's just a confirmation, and ultimately teams move forward. So you've seen both sides of the coin, and I think it's going to be huge. None more so than for Josh Simmons, in my opinion. So it'll be interesting to see how a lot of those things check out. Obviously, we won't be privy to a lot of the interviews and how guys show up in those interviews. So that's going to be huge. That's going to be critical because teams ultimately want to see if these guys can be a fit in their program. And so we won't be able to utilize any of that knowledge. We're not going to have that. But we could still take a look at how they interact out there at the combine. You'll be able to see really, you know, what's the body language look like, how do they perform under pressure, because look, you know, there's a lot of pressure on these guys at the combine. It's a crazy job interview, and you know, it's interesting to get a good feel for a lot of these guys when they get onto that stage competing against one another. So be looking forward to that, bringing all of the combine coverage, and then we'll get into really my first mock draft. It's on the website right now, on the readyforthedraft.com site. My first round, ultimately went back through, took a look at things, and if Tennessee, if they are truly looking at a potential generational type talent, one of two guys, Abdul Carter, or it's going to be Travis Hunter. It's not going to be a quarterback. So that's really the big question mark. Read between the lines there. I think there's a good chance that Tennessee could trade down. I think there's a good chance that Cleveland could also trade down. Why? These are two teams who need capital. They need draft capital. They need to really fill out that roster. There are a lot of holes, and just taking one guy at the top of the draft isn't going to fill all of those needs. But I think that's ultimately where I see this thing shaping up, is we're going to see some movement at the top of this draft when it's all said and done. And I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are as well. We'll get in and really dive into some of the team needs as well. And look, we're still 2 months away from the actual NFL draft, so there's a lot to cover between now and then. But the countdown is on for Green Bay, and I'm looking forward to it. Hope you are as well. So until next time, everyone, for readyforthedraft.com, this has been the Ready for the Draft podcast. I've been your host, Greg Schutz. Take care, everyone. Enjoy your week. And until next time, I am out of here.